हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीहाद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
Page 28, chapter 19.
Yes. I have a question about the canto 11. When we say that when Krishna left this world, he leaves the Bhagavatam, and
yes,
every canto represents some part of Krishna's body. So the 11th canto means it is a face, no? Is the 10th canto is a smile?
I think 10th canto is face. Yeah, the smile or the forehead, I think, or something. Mm-hmm. Anyone knows?
The canto is the face.
Huh?
The canto is the face of the Lord.
The face.
Yeah.
And 11th?
Backward glance.
His backward glance. Mm-hmm. Okay. Backward glance.
What does it mean?
Looking back.
Okay.
You know, because it means it's just like, let's say you're walking and someone's walking behind you. To check if they're there, then you look back.
Yeah.
To check if we're still following Krishna, then...
Okay.
Okay, dialogue overview. In chapter 17, Uddhava asked the Lord how one can achieve loving service unto him by the execution of his prescribed duties. The Lord answered by describing the Varnashram system and concluded that the performance of all duties should culminate in self-realization. Hearing this, Uddhava asks about the knowledge which goes beyond just realization of the Atma. He inquires about the knowledge that describes loving devotion and service unto the Lord. In answer, Sri Krishna refers to a conversation between Sri Yudhishthira and Bhishmadev. In conclusion, the Lord defines actual religious principles, real knowledge, detachment, and opulence. Hearing this, Uddhava becomes interested to know what is mental equilibrium, self-control, what is the actual meaning of tolerance and steadfastness, right? Because we have our definitions of what they are. But what are the actual definitions? What's actual tolerance? What's act like this? As well, what are the standard rules and regulations? Particularly, one no longer sees the material elements which arise from a single cause, but rather sees the cause itself, the personality of Godhead. At that time, one's direct experience is called vigyan, or self-realization, right? So, no longer sees the material elements which arise from a single cause, but rather the cause itself. So when you see things, and from that you remember Krishna, that's called vigyan.
Yes.
And when you see something and then discuss about that, analyze that, that's called knowledge.
Yes.
Or gyan.
Yes.
You understand? So what we were talking about before is that much of the time discussion is happening on the platform of gyan.
Yes.
Not what's beyond. But if you say vigyan, you also see gyan.
Yes.
Right? If you can see the Lord, you can see His creation. But those who can only see the creation may not see the Lord.
Yes.
So being Krishna conscious means whatever we see it in connection with the Lord. That's the specialness. Yeah? Chapter 19 summarizes questions and answers. Sri Krishna continues to answer question 11:24 from chapter 17 through verse 7. Sri Uddhava asked Sri Krishna 11:25 of Srimad Bhagavatam 11:19:8. Sri Uddhava said, O Lord of the universe, O form of the universe, please explain to me that process of knowledge which automatically brings detachment and direct perception of the truth, which is transcendental and which is traditional among great spiritual philosophers. Right, so this is the great spiritual philosophers, then that knowledge which automatically brings detachment and direct perception of the truth. Right, so what do you call it? Some philosophers, you don't get any detachment or any perception of the truth, but they're not the great ones. This knowledge, sought by elevated personalities, describes loving devotional service unto your lordship. Right? So that means the actual philosophy is about how to know Krishna himself as a person. Right? Sri Krishna answers this question from verse 11 through 27. Sri Uddhava asked Sri Krishna questions 11:26 of Srimad Bhagavatam from 11:19:28 through 32. Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Lord Krishna, O chastiser of the enemies, please let me know how many types of disciplinary regulations and regular daily duties there are. Also, my Lord, tell me what is mental equilibrium, what is self-control, and what is the actual meaning of tolerance and steadfastness. What are charity, austerity, and heroism? And how are reality and truth be described? What is renunciation and what is wealth? What is desirable? What is sacrifice? What is religious remuneration? My dear Keshava, O most fortunate one, how am I to understand the strength, opulence, and profit of a particular person? What is the best education? What is actual humility, and what is real beauty? What are happiness and unhappiness? Who is learned and who is a fool? What are the truth and the false paths in life, and what are heaven and hell? Who is indeed a true friend, and what is one's real home? Who is a rich man, and who is a poor man? Who is wretched, and who is an actual controller? O Lord of the devotees, kindly explain these matters to me, along with their opposites." Mm-hmm. Sri Krishna answers these questions throughout the rest of the chapter. Right, so you also have to be, Krishna, or empowered by him to remember even all the questions and then to be able to give the answers. Right? So,
and either this matter and the opposite also.
Yeah, yeah. As these and the opposite. What is wealth? What is, not? What is the... Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 19th chapter, bhakti of the devotee who gives up sadhana of the jnani and the definitions of word like yama are described. Sardatta Darshani 11:19:1. The Supreme Lord Sri Krishna stated to Uddhava, "One who is actually wise, who knows the truth of the self and possesses transcendental insight, rejects the world of dualities and the so-called knowledge meant for facilitating enjoyment of it. He instead engages himself in trying to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of all. This is pure bhakti yoga." Right? So, the world of dualities, that's not the important thing. It's how to satisfy Krishna, how to see things connected to Krishna, which is the actual focus. That's what we want to try to get to. Right? Because manipulating this world, even if it's in an appropriate way, that's not the actual point. The point is pleasing Krishna, just like we may cook potatoes very nicely, but it's not about the cooking the potatoes, it's about offering the Krishna to please him. Right? So it's about pleasing Krishna. That you're doing by an offering, that you're doing by offering something, that you're doing by having the potatoes you have because you cooked them. Does that make sense? Mm. So then there's this whole long thing. You have the potatoes because you went to the market. You went to the market because you have a car. You have a car because you had money. You had petrol. You had petrol because you had the money to buy the petrol, right? Does that make sense? And then all these things. You have the driver's license. You have the this, But it all is, when it's all engaged to please Krishna, then it all becomes connected. So all these points, yes, they're discussed only in as much as they are useful to Krishna. But other than that, they're not useful to Krishna. Does that make sense? They're part of his material energy, and they're already Krishna's. But when we take them and connect them to Krishna, that's when it becomes special. So that's science, how to connect that all to Krishna. That's then what is the actual point. That's what we're trying to get at. Because if we always remember Krishna, then we'll always remember his name, form, qualities, and pastimes. Like yesterday we were discussing about, we hear 10th canto, and that's the pinnacle. Why do we have in this discussion here in 11th canto? Because we've heard the 10th canto, but are we always meditating upon it? Are we always absorbed? No, but we're not. Why not? Because we're distracted. Why are we distracted? Because we have other material desires. So giving up all those material desires, then we can come to the point we're always absorbed in Krishna's name, form, and quality, and pastimes. Right? Is that?
Yeah.
So that's the whole idea. You know. You know, it's just like when you're healthy, you can do all kinds of nice things, but when you're sick, then you take the medicine. So 11th canto is one of the medicinal processes, yes. See, it's our third installment in the knowledge of the Gita.
Yes.
Right? So we had the Bhagavad Gita to start the process. Then we heard so many things. Then we started the Bhagavatam, then partway through. Then in that group, then we hear the Gita. Right? Then we get introduced pure devotional service. And now in that context, now, then we're hearing Gita again.
Yeah.
Right? Yes.
Even the questions, it sounds like extended version of what Arjuna asked in the Gita.
Yes. Because you're just taking that step further. That's why the Gita is said to be the ABCs. It's all the fundaments that are be discussed. It's just that then in Kapila Gita and Uddhava Gita, they'll take it that step further.
Yeah.
Right? Because the one is so that you have an understanding of the philosophy so you can function within it and apply it. Then as you're applying it, then you can apply further and further details.
Yeah.
So now we're getting that more details. He instead engages himself in trying to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of all. Right? So if you're just doing things that directly serve Krishna, you don't necessarily have to be having that job that's paying for the petrol, that's paying that the car then can move, and therefore, and then you can use your license, and then you can go. You understand?
Yes.
You can just be absorbed in Krishna. So that's what it means giving up the rules. You don't have to follow all those other rules. But it doesn't mean that you're not practicing the natural form of Krishna consciousness. Right? Like, just like the mother taking care of the child. Is she doing that because of rules? No. But if you look in the definition, mother means someone who's taking care of the children. Right? Does that make sense? So, you can say is, from others' viewpoint, rules are being followed, but why are they being followed? Because of the natural affection. So when one has that natural attraction to Krishna, one is following rule, but it appears like, but it's only those things that are pleasing to Krishna. Right? This is pure bhakti yoga. Transcendental knowledge is greater than such ordinary pious activities as chanting of mantras. But pure devotional service is greater than even knowledge. After this, Lord Krishna requested by Sri Uddhava to describe in full detail pure transcendental knowledge and devotional service, related the same instructions that the greatest of Vaishnavas, Bhishma Dev, gave on these topics to Sri Yudhishthira on the occasion of the Battle of Kurukshetra.
When we say transcendental knowledge, we mean Brahman?
It just means with knowledge what's beyond the material nature. So in other words, devotional service.
Because it says that it's devotional service is greater.
Okay, yes.
Knowledge. That's specific here in the last sentence of the first.
okay. Yes, exactly, because they're using both. It would be like we use spiritual and transcendental.
Yes.
So then in here, then you're using transcendental knowledge and devotional service in the same context. So that knowledge, which will get transcendental knowledge, which will get you out of the material world, how you'll transcend the modes of nature, that will be transcendental knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Then devotional service is what you do beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, devotional service includes that you get beyond that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Following this, after being asked about yama and other practices of yoga, the Lord enumerated the 12 kinds of yama, beginning with nonviolence, and the 12 kinds of niyama, beginning with bodily cleanliness. Right, so yama, things that you don't do, niyama is what you should do. Right? Shloka Anusharana, summary of verses 1 through 7, the perfection of knowledge. 8 to 27, applied knowledge and detachment. 28 to 45, distinguishing between good, bad, and transcendental. Right? That's the spiritual, good, bad, and transcendental. The material is good, bad, and ugly. Right? Okay. Yes? No? Verses 1 to 7, the perfection of knowledge. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, a self-realized person who has cultivated scriptural knowledge up to the point of enlightenment and who is free from impersonal speculation, understanding the material universe to be simply illusion, should surrender unto me both that knowledge and the means by which he has achieved it. Right? He's gotten to that realization, but that's not enough. It has to be given to Krishna. So that means the knowledge itself has to be connected to Krishna, and the process by which he got there has to be given to Krishna. Otherwise, he holds on to that, then his identity will stay of a jnani, not of a devotee. Right? So we see as the mature jnani, or the realized, self-realized person, they come up to that same platform that someone else through devotional service comes to. But the devotee comes there much more easily. But the point is still getting to that liberated point, you still continue to, develop that love for Krishna. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. In order to destroy beginningless ignorance, it has been explained that the jiva must practice jnana, yoga, and vairagya without material actions, right? So naishkarmya. When ignorance is destroyed and knowledge is produced by those sadhanas are no longer useful at all, right? Because they're, it's just like you use the potato peeler to peel potatoes. Once they're peeled, you don't continue with it. You don't use it to, cut the potatoes and then to stir them in the pot and then eat the potatoes. No. It goes up to a point, it stops. So those things that develop transcendental knowledge, they're used up to the point you have that realization. Once you gain that, then they're given up. Right? Because now it'll just be that which pleases Krishna. Okay? A person becoming absorbed in a snake, tiger, or ghost forgets himself and thinks he is a snake, tiger, or ghost. Then gems, mantras, and medicines are useful to help him. When the identity is broken by those means, and the person returns to his former identity, the gems, mantras, and medicines are no longer used. That principle is described in this verse. Right? Then you come to that transcendental. They're not used in that way. Right? One should be endowed with knowledge, vidya, which destroys ignorance. Interesting is that's coming here, and then that was the point in the Vedanta Sutra. So you can see is how Bhagavatam is the natural commentary, because they're just talking the same thing.
Same example.
Yeah, same example. One should be endowed with knowledge, vidya, which destroys ignorance, composed of shankhya, yoga, austerity, vairagya, learning through the scriptures, which teach them. I guess learning through those scriptures, which teach those subjects. He then understands the nature of Atma. He is not a possessor of theoretical knowledge, but has direct realization. Right? So it's not he's just heard about it. Right? Does that make sense? So you don't say, oh, we're not the body, so then we do whatever we like. That's not self-realization. We haven't gotten to that platform yet. This is, you actually have that understanding, I'm not the body. Therefore, all those activities below that connect with the body to elevate you to that position, you're giving up. Right? Understanding that the universe arises from ignorance through false identity. A false identity with his body and related subjects. Or understanding that this world is temporary. He renounces all jnana sadhana for me, for Krishna. This means he gives up jnana in order to attain me. This is called vidvatsanyas. right? Because there's different. Didn't we come across that before? It was the vidvat sannyas. There was a couple of different aspects of sannyas. So one is, you know, this having that realization, that's vidvat. But then there was the one before, who he's practicing, though he doesn't have the realization. But he's still called a sannyasi. Mm-hmm. Anyone remember that?
I think we mentioned Kuchichev, Bahubad.
Oh, yeah. No, this is that. This may be Gopal Bhatta Goswami. I think he talks about it. Okay, so understand the universe arises from ignorance through false identity with his body and related objects, right? So that's why we try to not identify with the body. Mm-hmm. So if you have a philosophy based on the body and its related subjects, it will be material. The results it'll give will be material. It doesn't matter what words you use, it'll still be material. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, then, even the Varnashram system is used to then give the body and related objects an identity connected with the authority that Krishna gives. And then you use that in Krishna's service, and as he mentioned in the other chapters, by that, you'll come to transcendental position. Right? So all these processes being used to come to that position, then once getting to that, then it's just about how to please Krishna. Mm-hmm. And then we see is that then those activities that are pleasing to Krishna, those remain. So they won't be improper activities, right? Because they're about pleasing Krishna. Mm-hmm. Right? So the scriptures are giving all the ways to please Krishna. The various aspects that you can use to engage in his service, but it's only with bhakti that they become pleasing. Does that make sense? Yeah. Sri Krishna continued, "For the jnani, I am the object of worship, the expected result, the sadhana, and the means of realization. I am the cause of happiness and destruction of suffering. There's no one dear to me for the jnani. Those who had previously achieved complete perfection through philosophical and realized knowledge recognized my lotus feet to be supreme. Such a jnani, most dear to me, pleases me by his knowledge." Srila Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur writes, "The Lord give evidence from the realization of jnanis from previous history. Those who had perfect knowledge and realization knew that my surup and my lotus feet, not Brahman, were the best." Quote, "The wind carrying the aroma of Tulsi, which had touched the filaments of the Lord's toenails on his lotus feet, entered their minds through the nostrils and began to agitate their minds and bodies, even though they were fixed in Brahman." Srimad Bhagavatam 3:15-43. "Such a jnani is most dear to me." Right? So here we have the aspect of jnani means someone engaged in jnana yoga. Right? Or we have the aspect of the jnani means, like we see in the Bhagavad Gita, those who surrender. Then the jnani is one who then wants to know about the Lord. So it's all about the Lord, the knowledge, the path, and everything. But that's why he says it's surrendered, because then it's just about pleasing the Lord, not knowing the Lord. Because now he knows the Lord. So now what are you going to do about it? Okay, now you know the Lord. Now what? Now you please. So then it's just called devotional service. Footnote 3. "O best among the Bharatas, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me. The distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the Absolute. Of these, the one who is in full knowledge and who is always engaged in pure devotional service is the best. For I am very dear to him, and he is very dear to me." Bhagavad Gita 7:16-17. Right? So we see as this position then takes from that, out of gratefulness, you know, and understanding, then tries to do things in connection with the Lord, up through that position of pure devotion, where one comes to the transcendental position. Yeah. Right? It has that whole range, because they may not be situated in devotional service as strongly. Mm-hmm. Right? Because the jnana yoga is very prominent, and it's devotional service. But when we're taking it about pure devotional service, means it's just about the devotional aspect, without these other aspects. Then he hasn't become fixed in that. Does this make sense? So, the same framework, it can be applied wherever it goes. Does that make sense? You know, it's like in school, they grading on the curve. We all know this one? No? Yeah?
No.
Never heard of it. The curve means, okay, let's say the teacher gives a test, you know, and you can get 100%. But in seeing that, how you say, everybody is getting around from 40 to 60. So then they'll just shift 100% to 70 and the marks you give there down to 60 to 40. And so the guy who got 60, he gets an A.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And then, you know, the guy who got 50 got, you know, a B, a C, or whatever it is, C, D, like this.
Yes.
It's called grading on the curve. You just shift it. So basically you're taking here, if we're dealing on that aspect, the neophyte, then you're looking at it from that aspect, and then he's the best of what's there. But if you're looking at it then above that, the jnani, then that's the best of those. If someone who's doing karma yoga, and then the one doing jnana yoga is naturally in a higher position. Does that make sense? And so then it can... So if you're looking at it in pure devotion, then someone who's situated in this then is very dear to Krishna. But then someone who's situated beyond this, just in pure bhakti itself, then that will be even more. But then if you're looking at those... Someone who's exclusively absorbed in the Lord will be better. And then of those, then someone who's on the platform of prema will be better. You understand? So that's the point of devotional service, is perfect at all levels. And so the framework is the same. It's just where you're applying it. So, yeah. This curve is not annoying. The transcendental curve is not annoying. The other one, if you get a bad grade, it's great. But if you get a good grade, then you did, let's say, 90%, but you'll get the same grade as the guy who got 60.
Yeah.
And it won't be reflected in your grades. So therefore, you're doing way good, and so it won't be, oh, you know, they're also top of the class, but they're not.
You can develop humility.
Can
develop humility.
Yeah, you can develop humility, yeah. Sure. Just exactly what the, what do you call it? The individuals in charge of admissions at the, whatever it is, the Hopkins School of Medicine is looking for, right? Like that. <so.
laughs> Yeah. But now with that system, actually, we can see that we can all advance spiritually.
Yes, we can all advance, we can all be inspired.
And always perfect means develop our love for Krishna.
Yes, yes. That's the whole idea of this. Because you see is that these two aspects are there, is that you do have this point of that it's glory wherever it is.
Yes, yes.
But at the same time, you do have the overall reality that prema is the actual glory.
Yes.
So in the preaching, then you're basically trying to inspire people.
Yes.
And as long as there's no false identity, then, or let's say false ego, then... That's always encouraged. But as soon as the false ego comes up that, you know, one's in a special position, then you have to step back to the bigger reality and show where one's fitting.
Yes.
Otherwise, we're focusing here, we look here, and we understand what's better in all this.
Yes.
And that's fine. We're advancing.
Yes.
And at some point when we can, we occasionally you see this, it step back and then seeing the bigger picture, and then you get, then you go back in again. Does that make sense? So it can be used to aspire one, because now one can appreciate, okay, we're doing here, there's a bigger picture, and now I know how to carry on.
Yeah.
Or it inspires you to, you know, see things in a humble attitude and the proper perspective.
Yeah.
Rather than that I'm, you know, I'm so great and so special.
It is why my, since in the teacher and the student relationship, humility must be there.
Yes. Humility must be there.
Impossible to advance.
No, you can't advance, because if you think you know, then it will be Krishna will leave it. Okay, you know, so you do.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're showing the child how to do something, and you're going to show them some particular techniques. And no, I can do it. I can do it. They push you out of the way. Okay, let them do it.
Yes.
You know, and then you know, after a while, they'll figure out, or maybe they have to listen to you.
Yeah.
You know. Depends how big the ego is. It takes more or less time. Sri Krishna continued, that perfection which is produced by a small fraction of spiritual knowledge cannot be duplicated by performing austerities. Visiting holy places, chanting silent prayers, giving in charity, or engaging in pious activities. Mm-hmm. Right? So, the spiritual knowledge, what you can gain by understanding where the soul, not the body, and the relationship with Krishna and all that, that, just a small fraction can the effect it can give, you can't get by all the performance of very pious karma. Right? Why? Because of its connection to Krishna. Now, if the karma is connected to Krishna, then you're getting, you know, the same results. But the point is, one always has to understand that the karma is limited because it's jnana that makes it work. Right? I can do an activity because I have the knowledge to do it, so the knowledge is superior. But the point is where does that knowledge come from? That comes from Krishna. So, that knowledge of Krishna is superior. So, yeah. It always has to be understood. So that's not, it's not theory. As we see in the 11th canto, what previously we would say is kind of more esoteric theory, this is practical, applicable, direct Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? Of someone who, you know, so when we appreciate that, then we'll take it more seriously. And then apply it into our situation. Otherwise the idea is, no, oh, this is all theory. But actually, it's not all theory. It's all real. Yes. It works. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Therefore, my dear Uddhava, through knowledge you should understand your actual self. Then, by clear realization of Vedic knowledge, you should worship me in the mood of loving devotion. Right? So, you could worship him not in the mood of loving devotion for the perfection of karma yon. But he's saying, no, it should be done in the mood of loving devotion, because that will take you beyond. Okay? Formerly great sages, through the practice, sacrifice of Vedic knowledge and spiritual enlightenment, worship me within themselves, knowing me to be the supreme lord of all sacrifice and the super soul in everyone's heart. Thus coming to me, these sages achieve the supreme perfection. My dear Uddhava, the material body and mind, composed of the three modes of material nature, attach themselves to you, but they are actually illusion, since they appear only at the present, having no original or ultimate existence. Right? Means that body itself, you know, the material body, they just attach to the living entity, right? Because of his consciousness. And so then they don't actually themselves specifically have an origin. You know what I'm saying? Why this particular combination? Does that make sense? It doesn't have. Right? Krishna is the origin of all these things. But the thing itself, there's no reason for it other than the attachment of the jiva. Does that make sense? But it's carried out by the Lord, just like, let's say, you go to a restaurant and, you know, there's so many things on the menu. Mm-hmm. And not only that, then each thing has so many varieties of what you can do with it. It's the same prep, but then you can put this, not put this, put that, not put that, put this and that, put not put this and that, you know, just like the James, right? You know, you can get all the combinations. Right? In fact, if you go to a Jain restaurant and all those aren't there, you're in the wrong Jain restaurant. Right?
Can you do this one?
Yeah, it might be the Buddhist one. Yeah, you open the menu, there's nothing there. Oh, you could try that on the Buddhists, right?
Yeah.
If you're Buddhist, why is there all this stuff? How did we get into that? We were giving an example of stuff. Okay, and so then you order something so that it is prepared is only because of your order. Otherwise, it doesn't have any other reason before that. It doesn't have a cause before that. And after, it's not going to have any cause after, or you know, any effect after. It's a temporary manifestation based on your particular, mundane interest. Right? It means, of course, we can say all the elements and that, and they're all there in the universal form and all that. But the point is why this one? It's because you're interested. Not that it's not made of things that aren't controlled by the Lord in that, but it's there because you're interested. Otherwise, you're not interested, there's no need to create it.
We are the cause.
Yes, in that way, we're the cause. But we're not the ultimate cause, like that. So that's the whole.
We have material body because we want it.
We have a material body because we want it, yes. Because we want to deal with secondary, and if you only have second, spiritual means it's all connected with the primary. So therefore, we want secondary without connection to the Lord. So that means we have to have the inferior external energy, because the superior energy is always connected to the primary, and we're not interested in that aspect of secondary, right? Because you can't separate the two, right? The spiritual realm is manifest just to please Krishna. So therefore, you can't deal with it except in connection with Krishna. So those who want to deal with the spiritual realm not connected to Krishna, they have to deal with something that appears to be different from Krishna. Right? And so since the internal potency is what is connected, it's the external that appears to not be connected. And it's temporary. So therefore, whatever you're getting here is simply because you're interested. Otherwise, there's no need. Right? Like that. The Lord creates all the opportunities, variety. So we have 8,400,000 species like that, because that's enough to keep you busy. Right? Not that He couldn't make more or less, but less you may not get fully satisfied. With more, then it's too confusing. You'll never get out. So it's the perfect amount to get out. Try to keep you busy while you're here. Right, so there's no original purpose to it, the material body, and there's no ultimate purpose to it. It's just there because of your consciousness. How is it possible, therefore, that the various stages of the body, namely birth, growth, reproduction, maintenance, dwindling, and death, can have any relation to your eternal self? Right, if the body doesn't, how can anything connected with the body have anything to do with the self? Right? These phases relate only to the material body, which previously did not exist and ultimately will not exist. The body exists merely at the present moment. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The jnani endowed with knowledge and realization then worships me as the highest goal. But that is a very distant goal. First you should rise above ignorance, knowing you are Tvam, Atma. Taking Uddhava as his subject, he addresses people in general in this verse. O Uddhava, the transformations of the three gunas, the imposition of the body, take shelter of you, the Jiva. This imposition of the body, taking shelter of the Atma, is the effect of avidya. This is a state of attainment in the interim period. Right? So we've attained ignorance. And our prize is the material body. Right? This means it is not your natural state. Right? So your natural state is spiritual. Then you take this interim state of material. Then you go back to your natural state. So only in between, then there's the material.
Thakur mentions in Jayodharma that Maya, potency of the Lord, has two aspects. One is avidya and the second is guna. So guna is basically into creation of the material world, and avidya is going to act so that the Atma feels that he's related to this particular guna.
And the other aspect?
That's it, avidya.
So you said there's avidya and guna.
There's guna and avidya. Guna,
but he said guna has two parts.
No, guna is not two parts. Maya has two parts. Guna and avidya.
Oh, okay. And from guna comes the creation.
Guna comes the creation.
Okay, it means what the gunas do. Yeah. It's only because you're in ignorance, then you function in the gunas. Yes. No ignorance, no gunas.
No gunas.
Okay. This means that it is not your natural state, since the jiva has no beginning and end. You are spiritual and the body is material. The birth and death of the body does not belong to you, who are spiritual. How can you think that the Atma is born, dies, or is happy or sad? Because that's the natural state, is the eternal state. So this temporary state can't be an actual nature of the jiva. Right? So it's just in between your, you know, being on that spiritual platform and then leaving that to try to focus on the secondary and then realizing that it doesn't work without the primary, so then focusing on Krishna and devotion to Krishna, going back and being in that platform. Okay. Some may say, so this is where the some may say comes. When I did not have a relationship with the body, and when the body is destroyed by jnana, then I can remain separate from the body, but for now I am the body. One continues existing as Atma even when erroneously perceives false objects with beginning and end. Just as a person who thinks of a tiger continuously remains a person even while being conscious of a tiger. He does not become a tiger. Right? So the same way is that one has that position of being covered by the body, but doesn't make you the body. Even though you may yourself identify with it, it still doesn't make you the body. It is also well known that the relationship of the jiva with avidya is without beginning, right? Because it happens on the spiritual platform. Though through the power of maya, one could argue that if the ignorance was without beginning, it would mean this ignorant condition would be the sarupa of the jiva, which could therefore not be removed, even by jnana. The jiva sarupa would have to be destroyed to destroy avidya. Now we're really getting into Buddhism and stuff. But the idea that liberation means destruction of the jiva sarupa is not accepted by the authorities. Right? Because here it's happening because of the personal aspect. So when one doesn't have that, then one works on these, just what you know on this side. You don't know what's on the other side. Right?
So this same statement actually confirms that we do have our, you know, Swarup.
Yeah.
It's not when the ignorance comes, then Swarup remains as it is. It's just the jiva covered by ignorance.
Yeah, it just means, so many times it just says your spiritual body becomes covered by the material. So, you know, so that's the whole point, is that then when you get rid of the ignorance, then one functions on that spiritual platform. You know, but as long as one's here within this body, then that aspect remains. So you function through that. But it doesn't mean that you can't perform spiritual activities. So the main sarup is one is servant of Krishna. Then there'll be a detail of what kind of servant one is. Yeah. But the sarup, that's all jivas have, that sarup. That's why even though we don't know the detail, we can work on that the overall principle of I'm servant of Krishna, and develop that attraction to Krishna. Then that position of what kind of attraction one has, that's a detail. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
you know, it's just like, you know, one is, how you say, nourished by food, then what specific food, then that's a detail.
So the question at what point do we worry about details?
When it becomes natural. At what point does the girl worry about boys? Right? You can say, but you know, from three, then Ken and Barbie are getting married many times a day and every day. You know, so it's going on, but they don't relate. Yeah. It's just the principle of it. You understand? Then it becomes a detail. Right? Does that make sense? Because one of those, it will happen. So if you continue the process, then it will happen. That's why it's not a separate sadhana. It doesn't need a separate consideration. You know, it's just like, if you're not hungry, are you thinking of food? No. But when you get hungry, then you start to think of specific foods. And the hungrier you get, the more specific it gets. You know, that's the fun part. So that's the whole point, is as you develop that attraction to Krishna, it will automatically manifest. Because if it's your natural position, why won't it manifest? It's just like in the mirror. The mirror is dirty. You scrub the mirror, then when it's clean, you can see yourself. It's not like there's a separate sadhana to produce that your image in the mirror. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's just over thinking about it. You know what I'm saying? You know, sometimes in enthusiasm you overthink things and over involve yourself in details that aren't important. Right? Those who are mature in that area don't worry about those. But those who are new to it, then they make a whole thing out of it. But it's not so important. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's just like, let's say, the younger girls that, you know, should they call, should they not, should they do this or not, but if they don't call, then this may happen. If they do call, then they just go on and on and on like this. While the mature ones, they go, he's been bad, I don't call. You know, there's no mentalness. You know, now it's been long enough, now I call. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? It doesn't make sense.
So before that mature stage, we can say it's all speculative. It's all in the mind.
Yes, it's all in the mind. So that's why we don't worry about it.
But many devotees do worry about it.
They worry a lot, but that's because of the influence that has been brought up by all those who make a philosophy out of worrying about it. That's where the sahaji is and all that. That's why I say it's a cheat, because it's not. The sahaji is placed at that it's the detail that's the focus. But without the principle, the detail doesn't have any meaning. Unless there's that attraction for Krishna, the principle of love for Krishna, then there's no meaning to the specific rati or specific attraction you have. Just like if you don't appreciate Braj Bhakti, you can't appreciate a particular rasa within Braj Bhakti. So that's the whole point. In Bhav Sadhana, Shravana Dasa means understanding the overall concept. Varna Dasa means the detail of which aspect within that overall. Right? But you'll never, those who are worried about it will never bring this point up. In fact, they good chance they don't know about it. Because they always take in a Shravana as hearing about what I'm going to be doing. No, the first stage, why do you have to adjust? Because it's Shravana. It means that you're adjusting, but you're adjusting to the detail. Right? So they take is that you hear about your position, then adjust. No, you hear about the general, then you adjust to the specific, which applies. You know, it's just like you can teach cooking, though you haven't taught any preparation. You teach the concepts of what goes on, how to fry something, how to boil. How you can show these things, though you're not showing a specific preparation. Right? You can show someone how to fry potatoes, but you're not making a specific prep. Because after frying it, you could do so many things with those potatoes. Does that make sense? You know. So, that's the whole point. If you don't understand the overall technique, the specific doesn't have any meaning.
Yes.
Right? So that's what you're trying to get to. Is that appreciation. And then once you've gotten to that appreciation, then the detail has some meaning.
Can you say something about the context in which he practiced
Siddha Pranali? The point is that is there such a practice as arranging, getting into the details of the arrangement of a marriage for a girl. Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. Is this applied when the girl is three?
No.
So just because he talks about it doesn't mean it's happening for us three-year-olds. Right? So in his book, he talks the full range from someone who is not even accepting that there is necessarily God or his supreme position up to the point of, you know, Prema Bhakti. It's all described in the book, but one has to know where one fits. You know, just like, let's say you have somebody developing curriculum, let's say for mathematics, and they're very good, very complete. You know, so they make a curriculum from, you know, nursery school up to, you know, PhD. Does that make sense? So that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is doing. So wherever you fit, because those descriptions are given also, because they'll say, when you have no material attachments, these, that, we kind of gloss over those and just look at, oh, Siddha Pranali. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of seeing that though all everything's being described, so you know it's there, but you have to, by the definitions he gives, place yourself in the process. And if you think, well, now I'd like to be there, great. Continue to figure out where you are, apply yourself, and you'll get there. But if you jump, you won't. You know, if the third grader then takes the university level math book, they won't understand what's going on. So that's the whole point, is we'll catch some words, but actually what's being meant isn't there, because we take it, means you heard Siddha Pranali, have you also heard Surup Siddhi? Have you heard that term?
Yes.
So now Sahajiyas talk about Surup Siddhi and getting your Surup, and that's, and once you hear, that's Surup Siddhi. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out that no, only when you are fully absorbed in Krishna exclusively, in meditation, Smarana Dasa, that will bring you to the point of Purva Rag, where you have complete attachment to Krishna. That will then bring you into contact directly with Krishna, where you can start taking part in his pastimes now. But it's only when you have that total attachment. You have no attachment for anything else. It's nothing. That's Surup Siddhi. But it's being then presented, I always heard before, and that you know, when people explain it, Surup Siddhi just means knowing your Surup. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur doesn't explain it like that. And then they'll be quoting Bhaktivinoda Thakur saying, no, but he's talking, yeah, he is, for someone who's on that platform. So in other words, he's giving a manual from Shraddha to Prema. But you have to apply yourself where you fit. So unless you're in advanced stages of bhava bhakti, then Surup Siddhi doesn't apply. You may know your Surup, but that doesn't mean you can do anything with it. You're saying, just like, let's say, the father tells the son, you know, that typical cliche, you know, he's pointing out, you know, the whole, you know, one day, my son, all this will be yours, you know. So he knows, but is it? No. Is he controlling anything? No. In fact, they keep telling him to, you know, keep the dog, you know, upstairs. You know? So he can't even keep that together, let alone the whole empire. So yes, it's a bona fide part of our system, but that's for later. You know? Does that make sense? You know, so going down to the shop and tasting the varieties of cakes to decide which one's for the wedding, that's for an advanced stage. It's not that, well, you know, I like cake, so, you know, I'd like to eat all the different kinds of cake. Yeah, but that just because you eat cake doesn't mean there's going to be a wedding. does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's all bona fide. It's just that because he's telling all this, then we catch. So we see with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they'll mention, but they won't put too much emphasis because we'll get distracted. said. Does that make sense?
Talking, addressing people who have that discrimination.
Yes, he's addressing those who have the discrimination. And at the same time is then we approach his books from the platform of our acharya, from Srila Prabhupada. Then we know what's the mood and then how to approach, so therefore we can put it into that context. So that's why all these other schools that deviate from the standard interpretation, then they are a detriment because they simply create confusion. Mm-hmm. So that's why we're not very, supportive. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is that all right? Yes.
Sridhar Maharaj, he mentioned that fools rush into where angels fear to step.
Yes. So that's the point, you see. Yes, one doesn't go there. Yes.
Sridhar Maharaj also mentioned that he never read Ujjvala Nilama himself because it's for advanced devotees.
Yes, it's for advanced. It means you could read it and get knowledge, but you won't get realization. So we're thinking, oh, if I read that book, that no, you'll just get knowledge. You know, like devotees talking, oh, Radha and Krishna now are doing this, it's this time of day, and they're in this place in Vrindavan. But it's only knowledge. It's just sambandha gyan. It's not generating prema.
Yes.
So that's the whole point. It's supposed to. It's just like going, wow, yes, so this is a, LaFerrari. It is red, and it has big wheels, and there's a big, big engine in the back, but there's only two seats, and this and that. But are we going anywhere? Is it ours? No. In fact, we're saying all that, standing on the street, looking in the window to the Ferrari shop when the shop's closed. Right?
Yeah.
Like that. Then we can tell our friend, yeah, whoa, he knows so much, Yeah. But if the shop was open, then someone would come out and tell you, hey, kids, go away. You're disturbing the customers. Yeah. So, that's the whole thing. It has to be always seen in the context of, just like nectar devotion, that you have to see it in that context. If you don't, then you're not actually reading it. So one always has to be very careful with these literatures, because they are inspiring, but at the same time is, how much do we get from it? It's like, let us say, yeah, it's just like for someone who's sick, there might be a diet slightly different from someone who's healthy. Not that the sick person doesn't appreciate the healthy diet. It just doesn't help their position. In fact, if they're not careful, it can make them more sick. Because now they'll think they're advanced this and that, and they get distracted and... So that's the difficulty. Seeing that, then with Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada, then they're very careful about these things. They don't encourage, because the point is you don't is just get, go back to our same example. Is there a sadhana for the young girl to be absorbed in a boy? Right? You have to go through a specific sadhana. There's a practice, get out the picture, and then look at it, how you look at it, from what distance you look at it, and like that, and, which side you look at it, or something. No. So that's the whole point, is that these things, they'll make sense when you get there. Otherwise, you read, they're there, so it's just like that point was made before. Krishna, he's always there, he's reliable. So he's reliable. So as you progress through, it'll be there. It's not that all the spots will be taken and there won't be any spot left in Braj Vrindavan, so I have to get there now and this and that. No, it's like, Goloka is ever expanding, so don't worry, there'll be a spot. Right, yeah. So one has to be careful like that. So it's not that it's just the knowledge itself will work, it's that the ability to apply that knowledge. And that will only come in the proper association. Like that. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki, Sarva Veta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jaya Nitya Gaura Premanam.